Today's program is brought to you by US Opinion Research. US Opinion Research is a non-partisan electronic media company that specializes in the collection, publication, and distribution of news and public polling information. We provide a platform for fast, accurate online public opinion polling surveys that can help you gather information to make savvy, informed decisions for your business, community group, or political campaign. If you have an issue you want to ask people about from across the country to across the street, visit us online today at www.usopinionresearch.com.
Venezuelan President Nicolas Maduro is blocking life-saving humanitarian aid from getting into his collapsing country. Truckloads of food and medical supplies from the U.S., Canada, Colombia, and other countries are sitting at a Venezuelan border. At least 47 countries, including the U.S., have recognized opposition leader Juan Guaido as the country's interim president. And in a rare interview, CBS News State Department reporter Christina Ruffini spoke to Guaido's ambassador to the U.S. about the escalating tensions.
I want to thank you for inviting us to your offices. However, I can't help but notice you guys still are not in the embassy. Do you have any kind of update on the Venezuelan embassy here or the requisition of Venezuelan properties, assets here in the U.S. and how that's going for the Guaido government?
One of our priorities here in the States is to protect the Venezuelan assets against the Maduro regime. They have been destroying all our assets and property. We need to take control over those assets. We want to do that orderly, in a progressive manner. That's why we don't have yet the U.S. embassy, the Venezuelan embassy here, but we are working that jointly with the State Department, and we expect to get control over our assets soon.
But you don't have any timelines as to when you think that might start?
No, okay. Not yet.
And what happens if Nicolas Maduro continues to blockade the aid? Where do you see this going?
Okay, we will send that medicine and food to Venezuela. Here, the military force has to take a decision. Is they will stay with this.
The Maduro military, you're saying?
The military force.
Yeah.
Our military institution. They have to decide if they let that food and medicine get in or they will just stop at following instruction from the dictator. So this will be a key moment for the military force to see in which side they will be. If they will be with Maduro regime, who is not going to anywhere, that regime, is damaging the people, or if they will stay with the Venezuelans who need that food and medicines.
I know the hope is, of course, that they will allow that aid in, but what I haven't heard is what happens if they don't.
Okay. If they don't, people will see that the worst sanction that Venezuela has is Maduro.
So
because he don't care about the people. He don't care if the Venezuelans don't get the food and medicine that, our people need. The only idea about him is just keep the power.
Do you know how you're going to get the aid into the country?
We will announce that in the right time. Now we are just collecting them in the border of Colombia, and we will communicate that to the rest of the world, how we are going to do this.
President Trump has made the fight against illegal drugs a top priority of this administration. You heard his commitment to that mission just 2 days ago. In a State of the Union address, as the president told the nation that we are committed to put drug dealers out of business and truly make America safe. Nowhere is the crisis of illegal drug trafficking more evident or our challenge more profound than in our nation's southern border. And you know firsthand how serious this crisis is, because the Southwest border high-intensity drug trafficking area is among the most active in this entire program. Last year, Customs and Border Protection seized more than 827,000 pounds of illegal drugs entering our country at our southern border. And that's just the drugs that they found. Just last week, Director Carroll unveiled our administration's national drug control strategy. He described it aptly as a strategy of action, and so it is. That strategy lays out our comprehensive plan to combat illegal drug use and drug smuggling, and the high-intensity drug trafficking area program is essential to our efforts. We believe in combining the capabilities of the federal government and the expertise of local law enforcement It's a powerful combination, and you can be confident of our continued support. We'll also make new and renewed investments in law enforcement at every level. As President Trump renewed his call for Congress to enact stronger drug protection at our ports, and when it comes to the southern border, as Congress is involved in negotiations even at this very hour, let me assure you, we will not rest or relent until we have the technology, the personnel, and the barriers required to secure our southern border. We will build that wall one way or another.
The acting Attorney General Matthew Whitaker was on Capitol Hill Friday. He was testifying before the House Judiciary Committee, and in a hearing that was contentious from the start, Democratic committee members questioned Whitaker about Special Counsel Robert Mueller's Russia investigation. Whitaker, who had been critical of the investigation before taking over the Justice Department, said he has not briefed the White House on the probe or interfered with the investigation.
We have followed the Special Counsel's regulations to a T. There has been no event, no decision that has required me to take any action, and I have not interfered in any way with the special counsel's investigation. At no time has the White House asked for, nor have I provided, any promises or commitments concerning the special counsel's investigation or any other investigation.
The White House and Republicans across the country are going to realize what happens when you lose power in the House. And
yes,
the committee chairs flip across the board. And they have lined things up in a significant way. Not only Jerry Nadler, but Adam Schiff has threatened to go deep into tax returns on behalf of Donald Trump. We'll see whether or not that goes anywhere. John Radcliffe, a moment ago, we asked him how far that could go. And Nancy Pelosi said it's going to take a while. You know, this isn't something where you just fire off a letter and get an answer immediately. Hogan Gittins, Deputy White House spokesperson, with me now for the North Lawn. Hogan, good morning to you. Thank you for your time. I'm going to squeeze some a few questions in here before we get underway. I know the president is not happy with Adam Schiff. He's made that quite clear. How far do you think Adam Schiff can go in his inquiries?
Well, look, that's a question for Adam Schiff. The president outlined a message at the State of the Union, which was very clear. The Democrats have a choice here. They can either choose America's greatness, they can choose to move forward this country and help out the American people, or they can mire this country in endless, pointless, needless investigations that have no merit and warrant no time whatsoever. It's absolutely pointless to have these conversations when the president has done nothing wrong. Everyone knows it. Years of investigations, years of paperwork, and countless interviews and conversations. The president did nothing wrong. He's been very clear about that, and they have a choice to make here. There's a big and bold agenda the president laid out in that State of the Union, moving this country forward to do all types of things, from infrastructure to immigration reform, changing drug prices to make them lower, health care. And if they're going to sit back and choose investigations, they're going to waste a lot of time, money, and energy that should be spent elsewhere.
Dr. Gupta, thank you so much for joining us this evening.
Thanks, Don.
Let's talk about the president. He got his annual checkup today. What do we know?
Well, so far we've just gotten a pretty simple statement, and you know, you'll remember a little bit about last year, and I'll talk about that in a second. But the statement from this year talks about the fact that the exam lasted 4 hours. There was 11 different consultants involved, and it's the last sentence there that's on the screen. That's the last sentence of the statement. The president of the United States is in very good health, and I anticipate that he'll remain so for the duration of his presidency and beyond.
Calls for unity cooled quickly as the now House Intel Chairman Adam Schiff made his first big move tonight, announcing a sweeping investigation into President Donald Trump and voting to turn the transcripts of the congressional interviews with Donald Trump Jr. and Hope Hicks and others over to the special counsel Robert Mueller for cross-checking, wasting no time firing back from the president.
He's just a political hack who's trying to build a name for himself, and I think that's fine because that's what they do. But there would be no reason to do that. No other politician has to go through that. It's called presidential harassment, and it's unfortunate, and it really does hurt our country.
Joining me now, former prosecutor and Congressman, Fox News contributor Trey Gowdy. Good to see you tonight, Trey. Thanks for being here. I also want to put up a tweet by Adam Schiff and get your thoughts on this. He says, I can understand why the idea of a meaningful oversight terrifies the president. Several of his close associates are going to jail. Others await trial and criminal investigations continue. We're going to do our job and won't be distracted or intimidated by threats or attacks, he writes. What say you, sir?
I just wish Adam would be intimidated by the facts. The 2 years that I worked with him on the Russia probe, Adam was wrong about collusion. Remember, he said he had evidence that was more than circumstantial, but not quite direct, that the president colluded with Russia. He was wrong about Donald Trump Jr. and who he called before and after the meeting at Trump Tower. Adam has also leaked incorrect information to media outlets. I wish Adam were serious about oversight. There's a lot that needs to be done in the intelligence community about leaks, about FISA. He's not interested in that. He is interested in undoing the 2016 election results. And he needs facts for that. And so far, his intimidation has only been by that.
You know, I mean, it's interesting to me because as you point out, he said early on that he had seen evidence. That there was collusion. Mm-hmm. So I'm just wondering, you know, I mean, none of us know what is in the Mueller report. But I wonder what his response is going to be if they don't find collusion. You know, well, nobody knows what else they might see in there. But how's he going to react? And where's his evidence going to be if indeed that report disappoints him?
I just hope he's asked. I mean, I'll just settle for someone in the D.C. print media asking Adam a follow-up question. He said he had evidence of collusion between Russia and President Trump before Bob Mueller was ever appointed. He had evidence of collusion before anybody else did, according to Adam Schiff. So why is he not constantly asked, as a Republican would be and should be, if you claim you have evidence, direct evidence of collusion, what is it?
I was assaulted in a restaurant, and that
assaulted
person,
how?
That person has to go to court soon.
Assaulted how?
I was standing next to my daughter and many of her friends at dinner. I mean, she was right here, right next to me, and her friends were too. And somebody was grabbing me from behind, grabbed my arms, and was shaking me to the point where I thought maybe somebody was hugging me, one of the other parents coming to pick up his or her daughter. And then as I turned around, it just felt weird. It felt like, well, it's a little aggressive. And I turned around and the woman had grabbed my hands. She was just unhinged.
She was a stranger.
She was out of control. I don't even know how to explain her to you. Her whole face was terror and anger and just, she was right here and my daughter was right there. And she ought to pay for that. She had to pay for that because she has no right to touch anybody. She put her hands on me. I said, get your hands off me. She put her hands on me and was shaking me and then was doing it from the front with my daughter right there who then videotaped her. And let me tell you something. She just would not leave the restaurant. She kept going on and on. She went outside. She just wouldn't stop. This woman thinks it's okay to touch someone else. It's not okay. It's not okay by her own standards and not okay by the law.
So you called 911. The police came.
I called 911. The police came.
Did they arrest her?
She left.
With the police?
She had already gone.
You told the president about it?
I did, but long after. I told other people who
what did he
to
say?
Here. What he always says, are you okay? Were you okay? Was your daughter okay? Were the other girls okay?
How was your daughter? That's so traumatic.
Tough.
I mean, I would imagine for you, but as a mother, probably the first thing you're thinking
about
of is
other
your daughter.
People's kids there, which is why I didn't want to talk about it publicly. But I don't want it to become a thing. I just want it to become a teachable moment for everyone.
Amazon founder Jeff Bezos says the National Enquirer's parent company is threatening to release his private photos unless he stops criticizing the publication. Bezos detailed the blackmail attempt and published threats from American Media Inc. in an inflammatory online post yesterday. Bezos, who owns the Washington Post, launched an investigation into AMI's last month, after the Enquirer published details of his alleged affair.
I think as it pertains to investors, the question is whether or not it becomes a distraction for Mr. Bezos and also for the nine key directors that were mentioned earlier. There's no evidence of that, and it's really very difficult for me to see a hard line into how this affects the fundamentals of the business. I will agree that the quarter, there was some deceleration in key high-margin business lines, but I think as it relates to all of the news and the indiscretions of Jeff Bezos, I think the biggest thing perhaps for shareholders is around the divorce, because if there were a 50-50 separation of assets, his ex-wife would have 8% of the shares. And I think it is a question for investors as to what becomes of those shares. I don't think it would be in her best interest to do anything that dislocates the shares. But I think that's maybe a more relevant question. I don't think this really hurts the brand of Amazon such that I could see it affecting the revenue or affecting the growth of the company. If it's headline risk and the stock gets hit in an undue way, we think it could present a buying opportunity at certain points.
A woman in the United States is sexually assaulted every 98 seconds. As the father of three young girls, I cannot stand by silently while the lieutenant governor is facing multiple credible allegations of sexual assault. I believe these women. He needs to resign immediately. Should the lieutenant governor fail to do so, on Monday, I intend to introduce articles of impeachment on Lieutenant Governor Justin Fairfax. Article 4, Section 17 of the Constitution of Virginia says very clearly that impeachment shall be for a high crime or misdemeanor. There's no question that violent sexual assault clearly qualifies as a high crime. Due to the lateness of the session, in order to introduce any new resolution, the House of Delegates will have to grant me unanimous consent. I would hope that no member would stand in the way of this process getting underway. My hope, my sincere hope, is that this will not be necessary, and the Lieutenant Governor will heed the calls of many to resign this weekend. If he does not, we will move forward.
All great American programs, everything from the Great Society to the New Deal.
But really, economically speaking, reparations are for the damage done by the New Deal.
I think it's important that we get away, and we also study our economic history.
How are we going to pay for it? Mm-hmm. And, like, this is the war. This is our World War II.
The green generation has risen up.
Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez released her Green New Deal resolution on Thursday, and the reaction was so bad that her office scrubbed it from her website just hours after she published it.
You want to mop or scrub, or should we just kick it around till it disappears?
I'm Anders Hagstrom, and these are the facts. Here are some of the best policy points from AOC's vision for the future of America. First, move America to 100% clean and renewable energy. How does she plan to do this?
How is that possible? You're talking about everybody having to drive an electric car?
By remodeling or tearing down every single building in America.
It's going to require a lot of rapid change that we don't even conceive as possible right now.
And then building them back up again.
Take those exquisite tweezers and move this pile of sand from here to here.
That's her plan. She says it right there. Next up, guaranteed jobs for everyone, free education for everyone, and free healthcare for everyone. But that's not the half of it. She also promises economic security for anyone who is unable or unwilling to work.
Miss Stoger, my plastic surgeon doesn't want me doing any activity where balls fly at my nose.
So in AOC's America, all you'll have to do is say you'd rather not work, and the government is obligated to take care of you. And then she goes on to say she wants to replace air travel with trains. It's all in there. And how is she gonna pay for it? Here's the Green New Deal in its own words. The Federal Reserve can extend credit to power these projects and investments, and new public banks can be created to extend credit. At the end of the day, this is an investment in our economy and should grow our wealth as a nation. So the question isn't how we will pay for it, but what we will do with our new shared prosperity. That's right. The Green New Deal won't cost anything. In fact, it will cost negative dollars. Free healthcare, free education, no problem. AOC AOC's plan says everyone in America will get a job. My question is, why anyone would want a job when they can get free money just by saying they're unwilling to work? This plan is clearly a joke, and most Democrats know it, and they're distancing themselves from it. Nancy Pelosi apparently can't even remember what it's called.
I haven't seen it, but I do know that it's enthusiastic.
And more radical members like Mazie Hirono are even taking jabs at it. AOC's naive idealism is doing more to harm her cause than good. She may have thought she'd receive thunderous applause when she released the Green New Deal, but this plan would destroy America. And even her party leaders know that. And that's probably why she deleted it.
We welcome the enthusiasm that is there. The Green New Deal points out the fact that the public is much more aware of the challenge that we face, and that is a good thing because the public sentiment will help us pass the most bold common denominator, the bold initiatives, with the interest in, again, saving the planet while we create jobs, protect the health of our children, and pass the planet on in a very serious way. I'm very excited about it all, and I welcome the Green New Deal and any other proposals that people have out there. Virginians will resolve their issues that they have there. It's sad because they have some very talented leaders there, but they have to have the confidence of the electorate, and they have to have the confidence of the legislature that they have to work with. But I'll leave that up to them. I have enough to do here without getting involved in affairs of Virginia.
An off-duty security guard in Minneapolis has been charged with attempted murder after police say he shot a school bus driver multiple times after a minor incident on the road. CBS News correspondent Jamie Yukis reports.
Within just 2 minutes, troopers were on scene of a bus driver shot along a major Minneapolis freeway at rush hour. Traffic cameras caught the shooting.
It appears he fired 5 shots at the school bus, striking the driver twice.
Police say 31-year-old Kenneth Lilly wounded the 78-year-old driver, grazing him in the head and hitting his arm. There was one student on the bus. She was not hurt.
The 8-year-old girl, although physically not injured, thank goodness, but the trauma of having to experience such a scene is something that is intolerable.
Investigators say Lily works as an armed security guard and became angry after a minor accident with the bus. Police say he remained at the scene and dialed 911 himself before being arrested minutes later. Today, prosecutors charged him with attempted murder and assault with a dangerous weapon. Lily told police it was self-defense.
We do not believe there was a self-defense claim based upon the evidence we have received so far.
Officials say the bus driver stayed awake as he was taken to a nearby hospital, and he will be okay.
How often do you see somebody with a clean record pull out a gun?
Boy, I can't even comment on how often somebody with a clean record does something bad like this. We'll be looking at their record. That is obviously something that comes into play way down the line.
Elaine, the shooter's employer says they've never had an incident with Lilly. His first court appearance is tomorrow. If convicted, he faces 20 years in prison.
Jamie Yukis, thank you.
And a dangerous winter storm pounding the Northwest this morning, causing whiteout conditions.
That's right. It was in the Northeast last week. Now the Northwest. Rob Marciano here with the very latest. Rob, good morning.
Good morning. Really, the entire West Coast, rain across San Francisco, Los Angeles, and snow down to the lower elevations of some of the mountains outside of L.A. But yes, it's the Northwest that's really bearing the brunt of this. Portland seeing rain turn to snow. It's been all snow in Seattle overnight, causing all sorts of problems. This is a rare second punch of snow this week for Seattle. And they call it the Emerald City, but this morning, it is covered in white.
Overnight, the Northwest slammed again by another winter storm, bringing near whiteout conditions in Seattle. The wintry mass of heavy snow and ice blanketing parts of Washington, backing up rush hour traffic for miles.
2 hours on 5 to get home.
It's bad.
Cars like this one left abandoned as slippery roads and visibility become a huge issue for drivers. Wind gusts reaching up to 45 miles per hour in some areas, bringing down trees and blocking roads. Drivers stranded and some forced to pull over. Watch as several people help push this car along an icy road. And take a look at this truck that needed to be chained up and pulled out. Major highways closed down due to collisions like this one. And this bus stuck, struggling to get moving. The driver eventually giving up, needing some help to get back on the street. The storm hitting the Seattle metro area the hardest, with more than 6 inches of snow dumping on the city. Planes grounded at the Seattle-Tacoma airport with hundreds of flights delayed or canceled. Seattle is pretty far north, but it has a climate that's very similar to London. Snow of this magnitude is very rare, and we're seeing upwards of 8 to 10 inches in some of the hills just outside of the city. So, and they're very well equipped to handle it.
Hi, everyone. George Stephanopoulos here. Thanks for checking out the ABC News YouTube channel. If you'd like to get more videos, show highlights, and watch live event coverage, click on the right over here to subscribe to our channel. And don't forget to download the ABC News app for breaking news alerts. Thanks for watching.
We have some sad news to report. Baseball legend Frank Robinson has died. Robinson accomplished a slew of firsts during his 60-year Hall of Fame career. He played for the Reds and the Orioles and was the only player in history to win Most Valuable Player awards in both leagues. Robinson also won the Triple Crown with the Orioles in 1966. He became the first black manager in Major League history with the team. Robinson died in Los Angeles after a longtime battle with bone cancer. He's survived by his wife, son, and daughter. He was 83 years old.